You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Frankie.
And I'm Alex.
And together we are FNA Van Life.
This is the podcast where every week we bring you news or interviews with people from the nomadic community so that you can know what it's really like to live life on the road.
And today we have some awesome guests with us. We have Lauren and Diego and their dog, Kira.
Yeah, and we're actually live. This is one of our live podcasts, so welcome to the show, guys.
Woo. Hi, everybody.
Hi. So how long have you guys been in your van? How did you get into the van? Like, right now we're in Costa Rica. How did you get all the way down here? Why don't you just, like, take us back to the start?
Oh, back to the start is a long story.
It's okay. We're here for a while. We have time. Okay. We can get through it.
Do you want to say it, or do you want me to start?
Yeah, you can start.
Okay.
I guess first, whose idea was it?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I think...
like, nobody, you know, woke up one day and brought up, we should buy a van. That never happened. But,
I think during the pandemic, we started to watch more and more content of people traveling. And it was the same... we didn't have a dog at the time yet. So we were looking, how do we get a dog? And how do we keep traveling? And we come up together with the idea of getting a van.
Yeah. I think it just, like, kind of slowly crept in on us. Like, first it was just the YouTube videos, and then we started, you know, making little cardboard mock-ups of our van, and then we started, like, creating a more life-size mock-up in our living room with tape and things like that, just to try to imagine. And then, I don't know, and then we just saw, like a posting of a Dodge Ram ProMaster that was within our budget. Well, okay, well, we kind of started looking casually for a couple months. But I don't know, like, were we really serious about it, or were we just kind of like...
I know, we went with the flow.
Yeah, we went with the flow.
So where were you guys at this time? Because obviously, Diego, you definitely have an accent. You know, let the people know where you're from and stuff, and same for you too, Lauren. Let us know where you guys are from.
Sure.
So I'm Diego. I'm originally from Italy. I moved to California in 2016. And so I was living in California for like 5-6 years when, like, I met Lauren. And how about you, Lauren? Where are you from?
Where am I really from? Originally from the Philippines, but I lived in Canada for a few years and then lived in California for a few years where I met Diego. And then, yeah, I think we were, you know, at that point, 2020, we were sheltering in place at home. We were just itching to go. We wanted to get out and escape.
So you guys met before the pandemic.
And we're already, like, living together.
And we're already living together at that point, or?
Yeah, we met, like, shortly before the pandemic.
No, we weren't living together.
We were not living together. Yeah. We met shortly before the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
The pandemic accelerated things, so
we... we moved in together because of the pandemic.
Yes.
Okay. Just so you could spend more time together? Or, like, because of quarantine, like...
I think during quarantine we were moving back and forth a bit, like, maybe spending, like, a couple of days at her place, a couple of days at my place, but... it's not an ideal situation for sheltering in place because of, like, roommates. We didn't want to expose other people to,
I had roommates.
Moving.
Gotcha. He didn't have roommates at the time, so we, like, you know, it just made sense.
It does, it does. It makes sense. I mean, how did you guys meet? Like, what was the, where were you? Was it, like, online? How did you guys meet?
So, we met online, and we like to tell, like, the story of a first date, where basically, out of the blue, literally, I texted Lauren and say, hey, I'm going to this, like, San Francisco fun run. do you want to come? And she actually already bought the tickets herself. Yeah. So she's like, okay, then looks like we have to meet there.
It was one of those, it was a 10K run, I think, and it was Beta Breakers. So people go out there and like they put on costumes, and some people are just like day drinking the whole day and not even running. They're just like walking, drinking, partying.
Yeah, it's a running on costume, yeah. So it's quite fun.
Cool, yeah, but, it's cute. That's
I mean,
fun.
So I signed up for the 10K. I didn't even have a costume. He brought me a costume.
If it is a costume thing, like so, what, you brought her a costume. What was the costume? And what was it matching?
I show up fully dressed in a monkey onesie.
Yeah, so that's how I first saw him, like in a monkey onesie.
And you were hooked. You were like, I was like,
this is that's the monkey.
The one. I'm like, I mean, I gotta marry him now, I guess.
Whoa.
And what was the costume you brought for her?
I had like a, what was the, like,
oh, the,
how do you call it?
It was the Cat in the Hat.
The Cat in the Hat.
Oh, nice.
The Dr. Seuss. Spotted, yeah, I mean, yes. Not spotted, striped.
Yeah, striped hat. Nice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were the Cat in the Hat, he was the monkey.
Yeah.
Yep. And then we went for a run, and she had to stick with me all the run for 10K.
Yeah.
So we had plenty of time to chat.
Cute.
That's really cute. That sounds like a good time. And then so you guys moved in together. Well, I guess you probably dated for a little while. Mm-hmm. How long was it before you moved in together and like to get into the van, like, type of thing?
A year.
1 year.
Yeah.
1 year?
About a year. Yeah. Cool. Yeah,
that's about the same for us.
Yeah. That's why I was wondering.
And then you start thinking about moving into a van, and then things get, you know, they start moving really quickly. And especially if you were moving in together because of the pandemic, and then probably spending all of your time together because you're both working from home. So how did that work in terms of, like, your jobs and remote and being in the van? Like, at first, were you both kind of, like, working from the van? Mm-hmm. Or, like, how did it all kind of, like, unfold?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we actually quit our jobs before we seriously started working on the van. Because, like, when did we buy the van? We bought the van in September, and we were kind of just working on it casually on the weekends and not really making a lot of progress, especially since we didn't really know what we were doing and we were just spending a lot of time learning things. So we ended up quitting. Well, I quit my job in March the next year, and Diego's startup closed down.
Stop.
Everything happened like everything actually fit very well, because initially we bought the van before quitting the jobs. At that time we were like we really want to do this van thing, like we want to figure it out on the way how to do it. But we were still thinking maybe we will do something like remote. We will figure it out later.
Mm-hmm.
And then things actually like fell in place even better, because Lauren decided to quit her job, and the company where I was working like closed shop. So I was like, okay, that looks like a sign.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's a sign. It was also kind of validating, I guess, because we found ourselves in a unique position where we both weren't working, and also I was emerging from years of burnout, so I needed the rest. And Diego was also kind of burnt out as well.
Yeah, I mean, after like the months of like sheltering in place and working from home every day.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone was kind of burnt out at that point.
I think everybody at that point like wanted to get out and do something.
Yeah,
especially
for sure.
If you were following the rules, I guess, that were in place of like,
oh my God,
stay
inside. We were following it to the
dot. We were pretty strict. So like we really suffered it a lot because we were not leaving the house at some point.
Our standard of living actually increased when we adopted Kira, because then we had an excuse to go outside and walk.
Nice. Wow.
But yeah, I mean, at that point we just kind of saw it as an opportunity to take this break that we so desperately wanted and just focus full time on this project.
So I feel like you're coming from a burnout kind of situation. You're tired. Mm-hmm. Most people think that building a van is very hard and will burn you out also, and it's stressful and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So how was it actually when you got to like full-time invest all of your energy into building the van, and then how long did that take?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on point.
That's a great question.
I think it was definitely very hard building the van, but I think that is why we are glad that at that point we ended our jobs, because we could focus fully, like all the mental energy, just on the van. We mm-hmm. didn't have to juggle multiple things, mm-hmm. and still, it was very hard.
But then, yeah, funny enough, like we ended up working so much during that time, like maybe 10 to 12 hours every single day, no mm-hmm. weekends. Like we were just like, we just poured all of our energy into the van build. And at first, it was really fun because it was all these things that we're learning, we're figuring out, and I was like, you know, having such a fun time putting the sheep wool in and like mm-hmm. all of these things. But then, I don't know, a couple months in, it just got like, you know, it was like round two, more yeah. burnout.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. The timeline for us was like, first 3 months we were working only on the weekends because we were still having like our jobs. And then, so 3 months of like weekends work, and then 6 months of like full time, every single day. Mm-hmm. Probably no weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So you hit this burnout spot at some point in time in your build. What was the hardest point of the build, I guess? Like, because it's a test of your relationship, too. It's a test of many different things. Mm-hmm. But what was, like, the hardest situation? It could be personal. It could be physical. What was the hardest part of the van build?
Mm-hmm.
It could be mm-hmm. different for both of you, too.
You go, Lauren.
I remember freaking out a lot about the electrical system. I mean, my background is in electrical engineering, so I mean, in theory, I knew what I was doing, but I've never actually built anything practically. Like, that was my first time building an actual electrical system by myself, and then, you know, crimping all the wires and putting all the connectors in myself. And because of my background, I've been exposed to so many safety standards, and so in my mind, I had all of these scenarios of, you know, worst case scenarios, like, oh my god, like, what if there was an arc here, or what happens if, you know, this connector wears out, and a loose connection occurs, and like, how are we gonna fix it, and there's just so many details, and I just kind of like, just my brain short-circuited at one point, and I was just like, you know, out of commission for a couple days.
Cannot compute. Yeah. System overload. Yeah, it's funny because background.
I showed something.
I think she needs water.
Yeah,
she could be thirsty. Sorry.
You could just use the tap. Then just open the tap.
Yeah, it's all fresh water. Give her as much as you need.
Our dog Kira has been whining for the last 5 minutes.
So their dog is a Siberian Husky too. So and it's fairly warm here. It's not crazy hot, but it's it's warm enough to where she
that
feels
was a stretch.
It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so
we got a happy dog.
I feel like for a lot of things in the van, you almost have to like release your perfectionism.
Correct.
Yeah. Did you find that kind of like at the end of the electrical stuff, it was like, okay, this is good enough, and like we'll be fine?
No, it kept going. I never thought I had an issue with perfectionism until the van build, when I just like every single thing was like, oh my god, it's not perfect. Like things like painting and like sanding things down.
I love how you looked around that van. Like, wait, can I find it?
Where's something
Where's
that's wrong?
No. Where is it?
Because I'm just trying to look around and like see like what triggers me.
Yeah. I mean, I have several of them in here. Like the fact that this doesn't like line up perfectly.
Yeah,
in the back area.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we have
like,
the same thing.
Like stupid things
of course,
like
everybody
that
does.
That we don't even notice anymore. Like we don't look at it. We don't go, you know, every day looking at like, oh yeah, that thing doesn't match,
yeah,
this thing doesn't line up. But when you're building it, you're just fixating on that one thing, and like, yeah, woodworking was particularly frustrating. Like I was a beginner, and just things don't fit right away, and you have to kind of like, you know, you measure it 3 times, and then you try to put everything together and then make adjustments as you go.
There was this funny thing where we were building all the drawers one by one. And after the first one, Lauren thought, like, okay, I think I got the gist of it. Let me work like 6 drawers in a batch so that I can build, like, I can cut like the left side for 6 of them, the right side for 6 of them.
I was thinking efficiency.
Trying to be efficient.
Efficient.
Yeah.
And so she worked for like several days, gets like 6 drawers ready.
And I was like, woo, I'm going to finish so quickly.
And then we finally like tried to fit these drawers into the furniture that we built like a week before. Uh-huh. And things were all kind of different shapes and nothing fit.
Because like once you put it in, it actually changes the contour of the actual stuff because the van's not a straight square.
Yes. Yeah. And then you notice that like you built them assuming all the, everything was kind of like a square, and it's not. Like,
so I think you guys already named this podcast, and I think is van life is not perfect. You know what I mean? Like it's not. Like even when you're putting in the drawers and you're doing these things, none of it's perfect because you know everybody sees the lifestyle from Instagram per se.
Yeah.
And you think like, oh, that's the perfect life.
Yeah.
That's my dream.
Yeah.
You know, but then you like when you're actually doing it and you're building it, you realize, man, you got to get as far away from being perfect than you can in order to like make it a fun process.
Yeah.
So as you say, like what saved us like was eventually to embrace this,
mm-hmm.
and we start to like remind ourselves of like a Japanese word.
I don't even remember what it is.
Wabi-sabi. Oh my god, yeah.
Which like, should be like oh god, the art of imperfection.
Huh? It's like something to do with embracing the transient nature of things and the imperfection, the rawness of elements around you.
It's like so imperfectly perfect.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And it was like, you know, that kind of imperfect aesthetic that we were like, okay. Since everything is, you know, messed up, we might as well embrace this new concept.
Oh, yeah.
What's the word again? Can you say it?
Wabi-sabi?
Wabi-sabi.
I like that. Yeah. It might be the new thing I live by. just because I know how many things just, like, don't go according to plan.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of love the fact of, like, things not being perfect. It, like, allows you to go on this journey of trying to get better at something. You know, mm-hmm. it's like surfing the other day out here. You know, it's, you know, you feel like you're doing pretty good, but then you get mauled by a wave and you're like, what happened? Like, how did I just get whacked by that thing? But yeah, you know, it's just kind of life, and I love that. That's a great way to live. Well, how do you say it again?
Wabi-sabi.
Wabi-sabi.
Wabi-sabi. All right,
cool, I like that. Mm-hmm. Wabi-sabi.
So, Diego, what was the hardest part for you?
For me, I think there was a lot of, like, finding, like, the right style of working together, because one thing that I learned is that I am, and probably Italians in general, are very opinionated. So when we build projects together, I can have a lot of opinions on how things should be done. But of course, it's not my project, it's our project. So we need to find a way to work together. And in particular, also like the way to give feedback, because I might mean that it's our shared project, but the way I might come across when I propose something or give feedback might not be the way the other person expects it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of literally a couple work to do on finding the right communication style, like collaboration style, uh-huh. and these things. So this was very intense.
And choosing the correct words, I guess, too, because if you say like you, you know, rather than like we,
mm-hmm.
you know, it makes a big difference and could like cause a bad feeling for the other person, you know.
And again, this is not like a 1 or 2 weeks project, like a couple of days. This is like a 7 days mm-hmm. a week project mm-hmm. for like six months.
Yeah.
Nonstop. So, you don't get any outlet if like someone gets tired or needs a break. So it was important to learn, actually even to take breaks. We were building the van by San Diego in Vista, California, and we found our balance with like basically almost daily walks at the sunset going back to the beach. Mm-hmm. So we would work from the morning until like late in the evening, because in California sunset is quite late. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then we would just go to the beach to rest and terminate the day and get some energy back.
Yeah.
Like before the van build, you guys did a bunch of research, like you were saying. Did you buy any like layouts that you had like a perspective, like, oh, I think I could live this way? Did you purchase mm-hmm. any of those like PDFs or anything to like have an idea of like measurements and things like that, or how they built it?
I think we bought some ebook written by different people, but we didn't buy like specific like a layout or blueprint.
We didn't buy specs or anything.
Would you? Would you if you knew that that was available?
I don't know. It depends, because I feel like, I mean, if one existed that perfectly matched our requirements, mm-hmm. then yeah, I think so.
I think so. We did some research, so there was an interest on that, but we didn't find anything that from like the materials available before buying, mm-hmm. seemed clear enough for us to be used.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I think I tried some trial for like some 3D software to try to build your layout with like an application, mm-hmm. and then I quickly found out like, okay, this is like not my expertise. It will take me longer to learn how to use this schema, this layout, this mm-hmm. software, than not start to making it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that evening we took like a scissor and like a tape and a bunch of like cardboard, mm-hmm. and we start literally modeling in scale like what the layout will look like.
I think like if there was a layout to purchase that, you know, had all the information on what type of wood to buy and like how to cut it and things like that, I think that would have saved us a lot of time.
I think so.
Because mm-hmm. like we had to like kind of make everything on paper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Diego said, we tried to do the 3D modeling thing, but we're both super impatient, so we just kind of like sketched it real quick on paper, mm-hmm. and then like started cutting wood.
The other thing is that Lauren is very good at drawing, so like at some point I decided that like it was easier for me to ask Lauren to try to draw whatever we were thinking, like, can mm-hmm. you add this furniture here, can you do this, can you mm-hmm. do that, mm-hmm. and she will literally draw freehand on the iPad.
Roughly. Rough sketches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's so helpful, though. I had, like, a notebook of, like, all the drawings and stuff of how mm-hmm. I wanted to... Because, again, it's like, I want a cupboard. I want a cupboard, too. How is that cupboard going to look? Well, it's got to be like this. What the fuck does that mean? And then, like, you know,
yeah.
so then...
Yeah, yeah.
And then this one person starts working on it, and you're like, that's not what I said, you yeah. know? So, like, having it, just, like, drawing it, I feel like it's so helpful sometimes.
And I think uh-huh. the one thing that we did do was we drew everything out before we really started building, so we really had, like, a good understanding of...
We changed it, though,
we changed
too.
It, but we had, like, an understanding of, like, these are the things that we absolutely want. Mm-hmm. Now, how do we fit them? Obviously, this drawing's going to change because everything is custom. So the distance from behind that chair to this area when I measure it at first is this distance, but... In order to fit the toilet, the shower, this and that, or have enough countertop, you know, mm-hmm. these are the ways that we have to put it in, you know? Mm-hmm.
So this is another interesting story. As the pandemic was progressing, I had a roommate too, but the roommate that was living with me left the apartment because he went to stay with his family. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden we had like a one extra bedroom that was empty. At the same time, we were also starting to receive some parts that we were starting to order, which means we had both some parts and all of a sudden a lot of cardboard.
Yeah.
So we literally start to create like
a mock-up
of a van inside the spare bedroom, like in real size.
Yeah.
So like, okay, this is going to be roughly what the shower is going to look like.
Right.
And we will try to enter the cardboard and
please,
say, okay, can we fit here? Can we sit?
Please tell me you have a photo or video of this.
Oh, we can't.
We don't have a picture of that.
I thought I took a photo. We tried to show it to some other friends when we were talking about the story, but we couldn't find the photo. Yeah. Sad. But yeah.
So how close were you to like feeling like it was the real thing?
I think... Like, I have this memory where we were literally, like, sizing the shower pan. And we were, like, place it on the floor and try to sit inside. Like, mm-hmm. can this work for the toilet, too? Mm-hmm. And we saw that it was kind of okay. And then for me, that was when it clicked that, like, okay, the mock-up that we made was sufficiently good.
Nice.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, once the van is built... You can get on the road. How was it, you know, expectation versus reality? Because you had been watching all these YouTube videos mm-hmm. and, like, probably
Instagram and blah, blah, blah. And then you just spent, like, you know, the better chunk of a year building this van. And now you're on the road. What comes next?
It was, I guess I wasn't really mentally prepared to be on the road, I guess. Like, we kind of wrapped everything up very quickly. The van build progress towards the end just kind of really accelerated. So it didn't, like, you know, the day that we finished, sorry, it's very distracting outside.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. We're parked in a random parking lot in Costa Rica.
It stopped.
Yeah. Of course, you might want to open that back up. We're gonna die of, like, heat in here if we don't have
anything.
Okay, so,
what was getting back
on the road.
You're getting back on the road. You weren't prepared.
I wasn't mentally prepared. It was just, like, it just happened so quickly that as soon as we finished the... Because we weren't really parked in our home. Yeah. We were parked outside of a friend's house, and we... kind of felt like we were overstaying because we said that we were gonna finish it in like 2 months.
You have to know that by the time we finish, we actually already terminated our lease, so we did not have a place for ourselves. And at that point, we were literally staying like with a friend that was like lending us his garage for completing the build, which we were super grateful. But we were definitely like not in like our own place. So as soon as the van was ready, we hit the road.
So that didn't really give us a ton of time to mentally prepare for what the reality of van life is like. Although we have been watching several videos, and you know, a lot of these videos depicted remote locations in Alaska and fun things like that. But when we started, we were just parked in, like, urban camping in San Diego. And, the first night felt very, I remember feeling really paranoid that, you know, oh, someone's going to see the lights and, like, you know, we didn't make our van stealth enough, etc.
Pretty normal things when it comes to van life, if you ask me. Even, like, thinking that you're mentally prepared... it takes living in the van and actually doing, like, just living your life regularly out of the van in order to mentally prepare yourself. I think it took us at least 2 weeks to a month before we were mentally, like, feeling good about it.
Right. But yeah, it's a process. Like, you keep, you need to be on the road to learn to be on the road. And
so. I think the proper way to have done it would be to kind of sample van life by renting a camper van prior to living in it full time, but we didn't get that opportunity. We literally just went from apartment living to van life.
Likewise.
So it was a
likewise
big adjustment.
And I think the one thing about renting a van, and I think it's a great idea, but I think renting a van you still have this ability to go home, like back to a house. So like, do you think it really would prepare you? Or would there be, like, a period of time that you would have to rent a van for before that you, like, feel mentally prepared for it?
I don't know. I think renting is a good idea, like, first. Because at least you know... You try once to, like, oh, where do I even park at night?
Yeah.
Like, we literally went from, like... We never took this van out of a driveway to... Okay, tomorrow we have to find a place to sleep. And so I think it was a big jump, but I mean, we did it. And then there were a lot of other things that we had to adjust. I feel like our journey was like took us from like many different stages of experiencing van life that everybody has to go through when they hit the road, because there is a lot of like excitement for the first few months, then maybe. For us, it was like we really wanted to get to Alaska and the Yukon. So we were driving a lot. We were like every day we were driving a bit, changing location, try different campgrounds. But that phase also wear off eventually when you start to say, okay, like maybe I reached my first destination and now like this is my new reality. I don't need to chase a destination as soon as possible. I can enjoy the road more. I can enjoy the journey.
So you went...
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I want to hear about the journey. So basically, you leave San Diego and you're kind of not sure where you're going, and then you decide we're going to go to Alaska, mm-hmm. which is like probably one of the like bucket list. Like if you live in a van or an RV, like Alaska is something that people like try to get to for years and they don't make it or, yeah. you know, whatever. And you guys are like, we're going.
Yeah, that was our first idea. Like,
I mean, it just felt natural. I'm like, I don't know, where do we go? We have a Siberian Husky. Let's go north.
Yeah.
She's going to love that. We'll go sledding.
Nice.
There is also another thing to know is that when we made our original plan, we will, like, the original plan was that the van build was going to be completed in 3 months.
Mm.
Of course, that did not happen.
No,
at all, not even close.
So in the original plan, we would be traveling to Alaska in, like, full summer to enjoy, like, to be able to get to Alaska, enjoy the summer there. Mm. And instead, we left San Diego in end of July.
Yeah.
And by the time you start to get north, it's like, the weather is starting to change.
It gets cold, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when did you actually make it to Alaska?
Well, we never made it to Alaska.
We didn't make it to Alaska.
But that was not because of us. That was because of COVID. We did like a 2 month journey to through like Canada, British Columbia, and Yukon, and we got to the border with Alaska in
October-ish.
And yeah. But
it was cold.
It was cold.
It was probably snowing.
Yeah, it was snowing.
But the,
we were the
but
only
the border was still
van
closed.
Driving north. Everyone else was driving south.
You see everybody leaving. You're like, why is everybody going all the way?
Yeah. So on the way to the Alaskan border, we wanted to do the Alaskan Highway, which is like this famous road for like every van life or camper person overlander wants to drive the Alaskan Highway. Basically for the last 2 weeks of our journey, we didn't see a single car going in our direction, which is north.
And they were like, what the fuck are these guys doing?
And we only saw like camper vans and RVs like coming back to US.
So. Yeah, the people in the other vans coming the other way were very confused by you two.
Probably.
Like, did they forget something? Are they just going to go pick up, like, their chairs from their last campsite?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what happened that stopped you from actually getting into Alaska?
So at that time, the border was... The border
the
between...
Land border.
The land border mm-hmm. between Canada and U.S. was still closed.
Mm-hmm.
But the U.S.
Well,
would not allow
Canadians.
Well,
it was closed to foreign nationals. I'm Canadian, so they wouldn't let me in. Mm. Even though at that time Canada was letting Americans in, but I don't know the full picture about like the what their policy was at the time. But we just didn't make it because of border closure issues.
Yeah, and we knew it that we had this possibility, but those weeks were very uncertain during COVID.
Yeah.
And,
things changed so quickly.
Any day,
yes. So we were basically driving north under the assumption that eventually things will have to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were kind of like half hoping that it would open up by the time we get there.
Were you traveling fast at this point? Were you like getting through this highway pretty quickly?
Pretty much. Well, a lot faster than we are now. That's
like
for
5 days, 7 days, 2 weeks to make the drive.
It took us a month.
Together.
Yes.
A month to go through like BC, all of BC and southern Yukon. So we weren't like booking
it.
Our routine basically to get to a different a Canadian campground, which are amazing, and like park the van, like walk, do like a even like a nice long hike with Kira, and go for like forest, and then maybe drive like 2 or 3 hours every day. Mm-hmm. So that was our routine.
Nice.
She was probably in all her glory in that weather up there.
Oh my god,
too.
She was.
Yes.
She was living her life.
So eventually we got to the border. We literally like made a phone call to like the border agent and say, hey, like, we are here, like, can we cross?
Is there any chance you could let us in?
But yeah, the answer was a bit strict, was like, no, like, it's not possible to enter if you are a foreign national. So
yeah.
I mean, on the other side, on the border with between Yukon and Alaska, there is like this amazing Kluane National Park, and that's where we
let me ask you a question though. You both had residency in the States, but you weren't able to cross having your residency?
I didn't have a green card.
Oh,
yeah. I was on a working visa, but that ended when I quit my job.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it was, I was kind of in a gray area, with, yeah. So.
Yeah, I was thinking that you were like still retaining the citizenship or the residency at the time, so that's why I was a little confused by it. Yeah. But it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Okay, so you get all the way north, you can't go to Alaska. Now, how did you end up in Costa Rica?
Very long story.
we clearly could not go more north because of the border.
Yeah. Also, so. It was getting kind of cold, and so we were like, it's time to go back.
I'll bet the roads were getting kind of rough, yeah.
Yeah, the roads were getting icy and snowy, and
The day we reached the capital of the state of the territory of Yukon in Canada, it started to snow. Until then, we didn't see like a full day of snow, but like the day we reached Whitehorse, Yukon, started to snow, and since then we haven't seen stop. So yeah. Like it was snowing day after day.
We were there for maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah, we were
in
there
the Yukon,
something like that,
and it was snowing nonstop for 2 weeks.
We went for a couple of hikes in the snow that Kira loved.
Yeah. She was living her best life. Mm-hmm. The rest of us were
like,
freezing.
Oh my god.
We were like, also at that point, so our van wasn't 100% complete. It was maybe 80% done. Mm. And one of the things that we had neglected to install prior to our trip was our heater. So we had no heater when we got to Whitehorse. And so we had like all of our clothes on, we had our sleeping bag on. While we were on our bed, like covered with all of the fabrics that we own.
So the second day of Whitehorse,
we picked a day that wasn't like that. There wasn't snow. That wasn't snowing.
Yeah, but exactly. So like the second day that we were there, and we saw that the temperature were definitely not getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Like we made an executive decision of like, okay, we are going to install the heater right here in this parking lot.
Uh-huh.
And if it does not work, we have to go back now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it worked out very well, actually. Yeah. Like, it was like a full day of work on the van in a
half
random...
Half day. I think the urgency was a very good motivator.
And yeah. When you're cold and your hands are frozen.
Well, at that point in time, the days are getting shorter really quick, too, because you're
exactly.
So far north. So, you know, it probably was more like a half day just because you don't have the night.
But
it's all night at the same point.
But I don't know if you can imagine, like we literally had like the Webasto, like many other van lifers, and we had the box, and we never tried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I watched some YouTube videos before. I knew what I was getting into. I had an idea how to install it, but I
never done
it before.
Yeah.
So I was literally like connecting the cables and I was like, okay, if this is going to start. Good, otherwise I have no idea what to do and we go back immediately. But yeah, we connected everything and it worked, so we were able to stay there like a couple of more days, enjoy the hikes.
The heater was a game changer.
Oh, it is, for sure.
Improved our lives.
That's the one thing that I think that people don't realize in van life is that you could make it to cold areas and be okay with a heater, where when you make it to really hot places, it's really hard to stay cool.
Yeah.
It's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
true. If you could go back in time, would you have installed an air conditioner in your van?
1,000%.
Yeah. We think that like for North America is okay without. We were totally okay. But once we cross into Central America, probably like every other day we would kind of like thinking like, man, like, why we didn't get, like, an air conditioning? And, I mean, we know why we didn't get it. It's very complex to install an air conditioning on a van. It's very expensive. So it's not something that you can do on your first build, probably. Like, you need quite some experience on what you're doing.
Well, you could, but it would probably take you an extra 2 more months to get the fan build done. Yeah. And a lot more power at that. I think it's, like, a minimum of basically, like, 800 amp hours in order to be able to run a AC the unit
proper.
For 6 hours.
And the other thing is that a space heater, you can often install it later, trying to retrofit your build to an air space heater. But for an air conditioning unit, it's bigger, it's more complex. Mm-hmm. You have to think your build with that in mind.
Yes, correct. I agree.
So what we kind of did was that we just tried to plan around it. So just plan to go to places where the temperature is comfortable. Mm-hmm. And that became way more challenging as we got to Central America. A lot, like, you know, most places are really hot. So far on our journey, we've been sticking to mountain routes. Like, you know, we try to Google where is the coolest climate in Honduras, for example. And we go there, or we make sure that we stay there for most of our time in that country. So far we've been doing pretty good with that. It's just like, you know, you'd have a few days where it's just you're parked somewhere, it's really hot and humid outside and you can't sleep, and days like those get really uncomfortable for us and especially for our dog. Mm-hmm. So we just try to get her to sit on her cooling pad, try to spray her with water, give her lots of water, of course. But yeah, so far we've been kind of just handling it, managing it.
I think overall it just means that, like, you could get into winter situations and be pretty good, but the heat is the harder heat, part about van life or traveling nomadically.
Especially if you, like, want to go as south as Central America, because at these latitudes there is no many places that where the weather is better. Like, it's pretty much hot everywhere. So
Until or like warm or humid.
There is not humidity. No escape.
Humidity
is the hardest thing to fight here. Which an air conditioner takes care of.
Yeah.
It actually dehumidifies your space. It's conditioning air is what it's doing. So not only does it get cool, but it also cuts out that humidity.
So if any company wants to sponsor us with an air conditioner,
likewise,
Lauren and I would be very happy.
So we need 2 air conditioners, guys, and we are both on board. We will make the shit out of content for you.
Okay, but so how did you get here?
Okay, so I think that the turning point was we were kind of hanging around in the deserts and in California in the winter. That was about a year ago now. We were just, like, hanging around. There were a ton of van life meetups, so we met a lot of other people that were just kind of hopping from one meetup to another, and we heard about a meetup in Baja called Escapar a la Baja. And so, yeah, that happened in February. So we and some of the friends that we met in those meetups decided to caravan together to Baja. And at first we were a little bit cautious about what road conditions would be like in Mexico. Is our van build even going to survive Mexico, etc.? But it turned out to be okay. We loved it. Baja was amazing. The culture was amazing. The food was phenomenal. And I think we met a couple more people that were planning to do the Pan-American journey. And we just fell in love with it. And yeah, we've been driving south ever since.
Nice. That's dope. Would you say the roads are pretty good in Baja compared to the rest of Central America? Or like, how is it comparable?
I think in general the highways in Baja are pretty good.
Yeah.
The roads that go to some of the campsites that we went to were not that great.
Washboard, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Baja is famous for, like, a lot of, like, wild beaches that you can reach with your camper van, but to reach them you have to go through dirt roads and it's like sandy roads. So you definitely need to have, like, gear to get unstuck if you get on the sand.
We got stuck so many times.
Mm. I don't think we got stuck in... Oh, we did. We got stuck
just that
in
one time we almost lost our van to the ocean.
Yeah, other than that, we didn't get stuck.
Our friends got stuck, though, that we were with, so we had to dig them out. Yeah. And, yeah, and, like, other friends that we were with, like, our one friend Nelson has a big old bus, and he got
really
wicked stuck.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, so, I mean, like... I think that's kind of par for the course in Baja.
If you don't get stuck in Baja, you haven't been in Baja.
You didn't have
a real experience in Baja.
But also, it's pretty easy to get out in Baja also. Because, like, you're never so far away from other people or Like, you can be remote, but you could also, like, run back into, like, the one tienda in town, and then people will help you.
And I think every place in Baja has a tow truck driver. Like, every city, there is some type of tow truck.
Yeah. Okay.
Whereas Central America, it becomes, like, pretty hard. Like, Lake Atitlan, you know how hard it is to get a tow truck there? It's pretty fucking hard.
Yeah. Oh. Someone told us that you have some experience there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we do, for sure. Yeah, you're going to have to go watch the YouTube video if you want to know what happened. But, yeah, and that was we were looking at, like, where they would be, and it was at least 2 hours away, you know, to get...
So, like, imagine how much you have to pay for that tow truck to, like, drive the 2 hours to come get you, drive down the mountain, like, all of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I want to know.
Yeah, no. Whereas in Baja, it was like, we went into the town, we're like, we need a tow truck. They're like, okay, we'll be there in 30 minutes. Yeah. We're like, cool.
We have so many people in Mexico that, like, were so nice and willing helpful and wanted to help us. Mm-hmm. I have this other memory when we got stuck on, like, a dry bed of a river full of rocks, and the van got stuck there, but... like in 5 minutes we got like 2 families, everybody was pushing the van,
and in each family there was at least one burly man.
Perfect.
So that was handy.
Yeah, perfect.
With the force.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So what has been like your favorite, maybe, I don't, I feel like it's always
favorite's
so hard to
a
be
hard
like,
one.
So
favorite
hard.
Spot, but like what have been some of the highlights of your trip down through like Mexico and Central America?
Baja for sure. Baja was magical. We really like climbing in El Potrero Chico. This was in León, in Mexico. And what else? Lake Atitlan. Mm. We really like that one. Your turn.
I think...
Did I already name the good
ones? Yeah, you already named the good ones, but I think there are a lot of very interesting places in Mexico that if you have a chance of visiting, it's definitely worth it. From like culture, like we went to Real de Catorce, which is this like
18th century silver gold mine.
Yes,
oh, cool.
you have to go through like a tunnel to enter the city. There is no other entrance, and it's like one lane. It's not much bigger than our van.
Yeah. Oh, and at the entrance, before when you pay the entrance fee, some lady goes outside with a stick. To measure if your van is small enough to fit through the tunnel.
We might not make it because we have the bags and stuff on the top.
That was a very interesting place. For example, like you cross this tunnel and you get into like this very old town.
Mm-hmm.
But many other like interesting places in Mexico that for the culture. In Central America, definitely like Lake Atitlan, Antigua. Mm-hmm. We loved the town of Antigua.
I also really like Mexico City. Diego doesn't agree because he thinks it's too chaotic, but I loved it. It felt like it had the right energy that I'm looking for in a city, and also it's super dog friendly. The neighborhood that we spent a lot of our time in was La Condesa, and that was the only part of Mexico where we saw these giant dog parks, and like everywhere was dog friendly. There were these big tree lined avenues where you see like almost everyone has a dog. It was amazing.
It was definitely one of the like nicest cities that I have seen ever in like in Americas. It's still a city for me, so if I can get out, I'm happier.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, brother.
I'm just thinking about all the tacos we ate in Mexico.
I'm thinking about Roma. Roma was awesome. Yeah, I really like Roma a lot. It's similar, like, you know, those lime trees and, you know, lime tree roads and just, like, amazing food, a lot of culture. A lot of really happy, fun people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Art and galleries. Just like great vegan tacos on the street. That was nice. Mm-hmm. That was like a good switch up for us because it's kind of hard to find vegan tacos throughout Mexico, and then all of a sudden you find this, in this town. What about, would you say there are any highlights even further south in Guatemala? Like, did you do anything in Nicaragua or El Salvador or Honduras that were highlights?
El Salvador surprised me. Mm. I didn't expect this. We ended up spending 3 weeks there, cool. which I didn't expect to. I thought we were just going to drive through it, kind of. But we ended up spending a lot of time in the mountain towns there. Mm-hmm. There's a route called Ruta de las Flores. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys
know. Yeah, we just put up a video on it, actually, today.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Nice. So, like, going through each, like, you know, from town to town, and then kind of passing through a lot of coffee farms was really interesting. The weather up there was also really nice, mm-hmm. so that was a plus. We did a volcano hike there, Santa Ana.
Is that the one with the lake volcano? At the top?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
Santa Ana volcano. That one was cool.
Yes, and then once we cross into Honduras, we went to visit the Mayan ruins in Copan. That was a nice stop. We visited a couple of other towns in Honduras, but we didn't find any highlights on the route that we were following.
How did it feel safety-wise in Honduras?
We've been very lucky. Like, we never had any safety issue. Mm-hmm. But the country is definitely more poor than the rest of Central America, so you do want to be a bit more cautious, and you also feel a bit more like tense, maybe like driving around.
Yeah. I think the biggest part for me was that we were the only tourists that we saw throughout our entire stay there. And then I guess the locals aren't used to seeing a camper van from California driving around. So we got a lot of interesting looks.
but at the same time, we really want to stress it. Like, everything went very smoothly for us.
We were treated with so much kindness. The first night that we entered Honduras, it was getting late. We were driving on this mountain pass, and it was super foggy and rainy, and we felt really unsafe to continue the drive. So we parked by this little comedor, restaurant. Mm-hmm. Super nice family hosted us for the night. They let us park in their farm area. We ate dinner with them.
We eat dinner with them. They wanted to take a picture with us. We spent the evening chatting with them. They were explaining us like their local food. So
they did also warn us about things like the road that was really bad, and robbers are, they're always a thing to be mindful about.
Of course.
We were really lucky. Nothing happened.
I guess one thing to understand is more that in North America, we usually feel safe to urban camp and just sleep on the street, where we find a nice parking area. But in Central America, and this is kind of valid for most of Central America, even Guatemala and Salvador and Nicaragua.
Even here in Costa Rica.
In Costa Rica, we were more looking for private areas. So if we could find a restaurant that was willing to let us park inside their gate, or a family that could let us park in their garden, that's always a plus, and it just increases the feeling of safety.
Yeah. A little bit more security.
Yeah. But when we aren't able to find private campgrounds and we end up urban camping, we tend to stick to busy areas, like a plaza, like a park in the middle of a town, where there are restaurants all around and there are a lot of people. That gives us
cameras.
Some safety. Even
in Honduras, we had to do a couple of urban camping nights, and you do feel a bit more uneasy, but we park maybe across the street from the police station, and or in the Central Plaza again,
close by the police station, or the fire station. Parking at the fire station has been a favorite.
Nice.
Of us. They're usually super, super nice.
We've never tried that yet, but we've heard of many people doing
it. A lot of like fire stations have like very large parking lot, and they are always looking for like some donation to just keep running their like fire operation.
Sure. So have you found that you've paid for a lot more camping in Mexico and Central America than you did in North America?
For sure.
Yes.
We barely paid for anything in North America. We always went for the free campsites.
Mexico is still similar to US. So in Mexico, we were still like not paying for camping. But south of Mexico, probably more than half of the nights, we would be paying for like some tip to the family who would be hosting us.
And like just for a little bit of advice, if you don't have iOverlander, it's a great app to have while you're going down south in Central America. There's up-to-date things, and it's telling you like if somebody got robbed in an area or if they didn't, you know, like if they had a nice quiet tranquil night, you know, that it will all be written in iOverlander. We all use it a lot down here, and it's been a savior to us, I feel like. Even like roads, like down here in Costa Rica especially, there's a lot of river crossings, and just like today I was looking to see like for our next stop, and I was like, all right, well, I guess we can't take 160 because there's river crossings that are like 50 centimeters deep,
and there's like five in a row. Even if you make it through the one, you've got four more.
That means you might have to like come back and do it all over again. It's a crapshoot sometimes.
Okay, so we're all getting hungry, we're all getting tired, we're all feeling the heat of the van.
Yeah.
So let's wrap it up with our final question. We always like to ask everybody, if you had like a word of wisdom or like a piece of advice that you would give somebody who's just starting out on the road or who's just thinking about van life.
Or who's thinking to like drive down through Central America, do the trip that we're all doing right now.
What would be like your words of wisdom?
I go first. So for me, chase your dream. Like, if you want to do it, you should 100% go for it and make it a reality. It's definitely more in reach than what you might think. And that's what you want to do. Get it.
Love it. It's beautiful.
For me, it's people are a lot nicer than you think. In general, like I've always been surprised by how kind other people could be. Between the both of us, like I'm the one who's always like thinking about, oh, what things could go wrong and like what if we get stuck, blah, 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 blah. And some of these things have happened. But in almost all of these incidents, people have been around to help us out. Like people are so nice. People are very like most likely. People aren't out to get you. People are very, very kind, and they are willing to help you and get to and are curious about you. So that has been a very special learning for me, too.
I think that's especially true in Mexico and Central America as well. Like, people look at these countries, and they're afraid, and they don't want to come, but, like, people here are just as nice. You know, you hear on the news, oh, you're going to get robbed, or you're going to get, you know, beaten up or murdered or whatever, but like,
and for sure, like that reality exists too.
Sure,
like, the statistics say so.
Yeah, but then also the majority of people and the majority of travelers and the, like the overwhelming majority of people who come to visit these countries have an amazing time, and the people who live here are amazing.
I think it's a beautiful thing that we're all experiencing something very similar, and the fact that we're all coming to a very similar conclusion about people around the world. And if you just get out there and travel a bit and, you know, live your life to the fullest, you will see the same things that we're all seeing. And if you have a positive mindset, that's going to just help you get that picture even quicker, I think.
And it'll all be FNA.
Make sure you subscribe to their YouTube channel, FNA Van Life. Over all that.